I'm the Doctor.
It's Clobberator.
Engage.
Shazam!
Chevron 7, lock.
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight.
Kawabunga.
Oh, welcome inmates to Heroes Asylum. That is right. We get an extra dose of medicine this weekend. The doctors are treating us good. We're celebrating partially the Batman Day or weekend. Kane and I also got done doing last night the Man of Steel.
Yeah.
So we're having a blast all weekend.
Yeah. Been fun. Finally got to do a movie that I've been dying to do for forever. So it's just, you know, we can't wait to hear it. Listen to them. They're actually really fun, the movie watch them all.
It is a double dose this weekend or this week because I will be dropping this episode. And also we'll have the watch along for you guys to check out. It's been a while since we've done a watch along, and I'm just having to go through the process. It's been a while.
Yeah, been a little bit. You just got to refresh your memory. You'll be all right.
But doctors have upped our doses this week. So we got some fun news. We're going to be discussing this week the DC Animated Universe. It's something that Kane and I have referenced since the beginning of the podcast. And I thought it was about time. We did a kind of like a breakdown, a history of it. Maybe drop in a couple of our, you know, hey, you know, if you're going to check it out, check this one out, maybe that one. But we're just going to just do a look, just a big overview of it. And, but obviously we're going to start that, you know, after we've done our awesome admissions ward like we always do.
Yes, sir.
Admissions ward. So, all right. I'm going to be jumping in right into that right now.
News from the admissions ward.
So this week, I guess I'm going to go ahead and let Kane get the take this one over for us so that way he can, jump into the big one because I know he's been kind of focused on the news this week. It was kind of his, he pulled the short straw, so to speak.
Sadly. Oh, well. Yeah. First bit of news this week is DC turmoil. Can you believe that, Mike? There's turmoil in DC. Or there was.
No.
Diane Nelson is no buddy of Geoff Johns. Defends the Joker, and she's not a fan of Zack Snyder. Apparently, Diane Nelson, who took a leave of absence in 2018 over the DC universe, she was in charge for a while, along with Jim Lee, and actually, Jim Lee is in charge right now. I'm sorry. She resigned on June 5th, but insiders say it was stress. She was not forced out, which, you know, is a load of crap. But in her latest tweet, she says she's a fan of the Joker movie, which is the solo outing coming out in a couple weeks, but she was not a fan of Zack or Geoff Johns, which actually kind of bugs me because she's one of those older WB execs. Kind of makes a lot of sense because she's actually one of the people that put Zack in charge. And now she's basically throwing Geoff and Zack under the bus, which I think is kind of newsworthy since the movie universe is slowly but, you know, tangentially turning around. What do you think of this? You know, Diane is no fan of these two.
I think she's probably just trying to save face with certain people. Me personally, you put these people in charge. Geoff should have been there from the beginning, honestly, just because of his history with the material. And Zach, I still say Zach, you know, especially after watching, Man of Steel last night, you and I have had a nice long, you know, couple hour talk about it,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, Zach had the right path. He was on the right, you know, right trail. Well, yeah, especially with me, I mention it all the time. Stick to the source material, change the story. That's great. Make an original story. But stay true to the source material. And that's what Zach did. That's what Geoff's done. I mean, you can see he's had some work with the DC streaming service as well. And you can see that, yeah, it's an original story, but it's still source material accurate. And that's, I think right now she's just trying to save face, maybe trying to find another job and trying to play the corporate martyr, so to speak.
Yeah, I'll probably agree with that, saving face. You know, I think she's still employed by WB, just like at some unknown position that we've never heard of. But
usually they all get, you know, the big ups, you know, usually have like, okay, we're going to put you in that corner office over there. Just chill out and be quiet. We'll throw you a project.
You're going to be the production manager for some movie that's going to come out in 4 years. Just you'll keep collecting a paycheck. But honestly, I'm glad she's not on there anymore, making any more exec decisions, because it sounds like she was one of the reasons that she was probably one of the reasons they kind of like messed up Suicide Squad and Batman v Superman and a lot of other stuff. You know, it just sounds like she was heavily involved. And for her throwing people under the bus is kind of like, you know, kind of shady. And I don't like that. You know, as you said, Zach was on the right track. You should have just let him finish it out instead of just trying to change everything midway. It just makes everything helter-skelter. It makes it seem like you guys don't know what the hell you're doing. So I never liked that. But, you know, Jeff is doing his own thing, writing again, and Zach is back to doing movies. So, you know, everybody's a win-win situation. I just felt right now.
I still would like to hear the full story on that because, I mean, there's been two different stories. You know, he was pushed out, the other side was the family thing, that there was a family issue. He had to leave. And that's when they're like, well, we understand you have to leave for your family, but the project can't stop. Mm-hmm. We have to continue moving forward. And in that point, I get from a corporate side, you know, standpoint, you know, yes, the project has to move forward. We've not just you, but we have everybody that's working here is depending on a paycheck too. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I'm hearing two sides of the story, you know, that he was pushed out. And the other one was that he had a family emergency and family situation he had to handle. And it's just one of those, I guess maybe one of those things, just like the Swamp Thing scenario. We're not going to really truly get the full story.
Yeah, it's one of those he said, she said things. So it's just, I thought it was kind of interesting, but that's it for that. What do you got, Captain?
Disney Plus just dropped this week all of their shows and movies that will be available. And I misquoted last week. I said November 11th. It's actually November 12th is launch day. Mm-hmm. So they have announced everything that they're going to be dropping. Like I said, movies and TV shows. And the list is stupid long. I mean, it was, there's no way I'm going through it. But check out the Heroes Asylum Facebook page. I posted that out there, that the whole list is anything you can think of from Disney. Anything that they have done movie-wise. TV, they are doing the Gargoyles, you know, they're dropping out the Gargoyles. We talked about that last week. All the Marvel stuff, you know, from the 90s, the 80s. I even think they're going to have like the 70s Spider-Man. They're delving deep. Like, I was joking about taking that day off, which I'm still going to do. But to go through everything, you're going to have at least a year to 2 years to have to rummage through everything. And then on top of what they're going to release that is new, it's just nuts. Everything you could think of. Like I said, for Disney wise, it's an amazing, and not just Disney, but like I was saying with the Marvel, you know, you have Marvel tied into it as well. And hopefully they'll push in some Fox stuff. I didn't see too much Fox. The Marvel Fox stuff, but I was tied in with Marvel, but like some of the Fox properties that they have, I would love to eventually, I'm sure we're going to probably see those.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's eventually going to come on, like, probably really soon.
Well, I do know they have all episodes or all the seasons of Simpsons. I know that's the one big Fox property they did drop. That is, like, the big one. It's every season. What they say, 30 seasons is what I read? Is that right?
Is it 30?
Yeah, 15. I was 15 when that dropped. 30. Yeah, it's been going for 30 years. So,
that's a whole lot.
Binge watch that one, fuckers. Then we'll talk. All right.
Yeah, try that. Good
luck. But yeah, that's the one that I definitely had. Was I was like just surprised at the list that they had. I was like, okay, it'll be a few things, you know.
Well, it's got to figure. It's Fox and Disney, you're combining a lot of stuff.
I didn't expect a full drop like that. I figure, okay, you know, like the first month we're going to drop this many, get everybody used to it. Then, you know, the next month we'll drop this, and they would slowly do drops. I think who did that? I think it was DC. They slowly did like, okay, we're going to drop this amount here, and then like in two three weeks we're going to drop this, and then we're releasing things. But you know, Disney's just gung ho and it like fucking bull through a china shop right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons they kind of purchased Fox was, you know, that library, that catalog, and combined with theirs, I mean, you know, it's one of the big reasons they made Disney Plus streaming service. So it makes sense for all that stuff to slowly but gently start dropping. So, you know, I can't wait for that to come out.
Oh,
good
yeah.
stuff. Yeah.
Big one.
I guess my turn. We got our first visual confirmation of the Nightwing costume coming in Titan Season 2. And if you haven't watched Season 2, I think Season 2 is blowing away Season 1. But
so far, yeah.
Yeah. A couple pictures dropped on, I believe, Minka Kelly's Instagram of the Nightwing costume. I mean, you could
see. Yeah, there was one. Actually, she dropped one a video like 2 weeks ago, actually, and it was them like running in the rain, like really quick. And you kind of saw it, but then earlier this week there was another one that dropped.
Yeah, and you can actually see the full costume. I think you saw a little bit of the blue. It looks like they're going with the...
Yeah, they're going traditional.
They're going traditional with the blue bird instead of the red. That's New 52, so...
Yeah, because I remember the video, the little video clip that was released. There was, like, lights flashing around, and I couldn't tell if it was the blue or the red because it was like, cop, you know, police car lights. So it was going blue to red, blue to red. So I was like, what color is it? The video was so poor. That's why I was glad that those pictures came out.
Yeah, it shows a lot. And like I said, if you haven't watched season two, I think it's outdone season one by a mile, three episodes.
So far.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but some stuff happened in episode three that was really good, especially toward the end. But they've just honed it in this season. It's more, because I think season one was more the intro, but this season, like, they're the Titans, and they're off now. And you find out what happened to the older. It's just a lot of good stuff. I don't want to spoil it, but just check it out on a decent streaming service.
I just think the writing, and not only that, the writers, but also the actors have dialed into their characters. You know, that first year, they're everybody's fumbling around trying to figure out truly who is this Dick Grayson, who is this Raven, and especially for the younger actors. You know, this is some of them. There was probably their first gig, and so they're having to dial it in. And then of course the writers, who wanting to stay close to the source material because it is. DC owned and DC written, but they also want to be something fresh. And I think they've really, punched that in to say, yes, we're doing this. These are the characters. And again, like I said before, staying true to the source material, but then dialing in sort of something new and something fresh to see.
Yeah, it's good. So Nightwing will be coming along shortly. What else you got, Captain?
Actually, this was a one I almost posted on Facebook, but on YouTube, because I got a little pissy this week, and I wasn't the only one on the internet to do so. There were two announcements that came out this week about reboots. And the first one was a reboot of a reboot, which I thought was ridiculous. They are talking about doing Battlestar Galactica, another one. And I don't know if anybody's seen. Kane and I grew up in the, with the original one, but then the reimagined came out, early 2000s,
I believe so. Yeah, mid 2000s.
Yeah, and it was amazing. It took the source, of the idea of Battlestar Galactica, and then just blew it up into this amazing world. Great actors, great storyline, just beautiful effects. Don't touch that. That is one of those few moments where a reboot has matched or exceeded what the original was. They don't need to do that. And then within hours of that, a rumor dropped, and it looked more like it wasn't just a rumor. It was something kind of serious. Was The Princess Bride.
Kerry Elwes, he tweeted, his response was
His
great.
Response was classic. Like, don't mess with a classic. It's just like, would you want somebody to redo The Godfather, somebody to redo Jaws, or somebody to redo, Scarface? There are certain movies and certain stories that hit a rhythm and capture a moment that can never be copied. They're going to be poor copies. So why even waste your time and actor's time and the money to come out with a bad version of that? And the only thing I could think of, is Princess Bride would be too... Girls, honestly, is what I just popped into my head.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
But just because you have the cast, especially the cast of Princess Bride, was so iconic. It's one of the most some of the most quoted movies, especially if you look over the internet. And just the actors, they captured a very special moment, and just don't touch it. Don't. Touch.
Just leave it alone. Just like rent it, stream it, see it again. You know what you could do? Just re-release it. Just clean it up a little bit. You could just do that. Hey, like the 25th anniversary of the Princess Bride. Throw it in the theaters again. Just don't redo it, because it just takes away. And it's almost like that RoboCop reboot a couple years ago that they released, which I thought was okay, but I wish it wasn't called RoboCop.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
Just don't call it RoboCop. Just call it something else.
I mean, trust me, there are a lot of movies out there that look and feel similar to other movies, and they just change the name. And we all know, yeah, that was heavily influenced, but it wasn't called it. So don't call it that. Yeah, but yeah, that was my one. I almost like fired up the YouTube channel and did a live video just to vent. I was so mad.
Yeah, I was pissed off too.
Again, Hollywood's gonna do what Hollywood does. It just bothers me to see certain reboots and certain things like that happening.
Some things you can reboot, and I wouldn't mind because I'm trying to think. Like, I heard they're gonna reboot Event Horizon, but they're gonna make it a streaming TV show, which is fine. You know, it's been long enough, and if you want to do it that way, that's perfectly fine. But
speaking of a good reboot, Ghostbusters right now. I mean, they're rebooting that in a way, or more of a sequel, not a reboot.
Well, it's like a sequel. It's supposed to be the sequel after two, which is fine.
So to me, that's fine.
That's what we wanted in the first place after they released that. You know, actually, I saw that movie, and that movie was doomed from the start. And it's not even because they were chicks. It was just doomed. Like, the whole premise. Like, I remember that opening trailer where they said, sequelize it to, like, it was almost like a spiritual sequel to the original. And they said, like, 10, 20 years ago, like, four scientists fought this. And then the next trailer, they took that text out.
Exactly. I remember that. Threw me off. I was like, wait, I thought they were referencing.
I thought they were referencing. And then it's like, no. And they had, the original Ghostbusters had cameos. It was horrible. It was just bad, bad, bad.
Cameos as themselves, as those characters, not as a taxi driver. I think Dan Aykroyd ended up being like a taxi driver.
Yeah, it was, and like Bill Murray was a psychic.
If you're gonna do it, at least acknowledge the predecessors. Don't try to stand on pretending that you're standing on their shoulders without acknowledging who they are.
Yeah, don't make believe they don't exist. They're there. I mean, it's the same universe, and they just basically crapped on it. This was never there. I don't know. It's just that movie was doomed from the beginning.
I mean, it's no difference than us. I mean, we talk about our, you know, people that have influenced us in the podcasting world. You know, we're going to recognize Kevin Smith, John Schnepp, you know, Collider's heroes. We're not going to say who are those people. No, we're going to recognize them.
Yeah, they're there, man.
You know, even from a wrestling standpoint, we don't talk about much wrestling, but you know, Conrad Thompson and his you know house of podcasting that he does. But you know, you have to recognize whose shoulders you're standing on before you can take the accolades.
I always say respect the past to embrace the future, and I think that's definitely one of the things that Hollywood should take note of. Oh, my turn, I guess.
Yeah, that would be you. Sorry, I kind of did a double.
I was like, wondering where you're going.
I talked about Ghostbusters, and then that kind of like, you know.
You're smart.
Drifted off. Sorry.
it's quite all right. It's kind of like a combo music, news thing that I'm going to drop now. It's basically for Crisis. You know, we always got to drop a Crisis news thing. But this is official. Tom Welling and Erica Durance are coming to Crisis, which, you know, all they need is to get Michael Rosenbaum back and complete the Holy Trinity of Smallville. But they're coming. It's official. They're there. Tom is going to be Clark. Doesn't say if he's going to be Superman, though.
I noticed that. The wording kind of I was like, ooh, really? Is he? Yeah, how is he going to? Or is he going to show up as Clark Kent going, hey, what's going on? And pretending to be the
now, the only thing that I did see from Eric Gunnenheim that he did tweet, it says that you're going to find out what Clark's been up to in the 10 years after Smallville. So, is he not Superman anymore? I mean, I'm just wondering, like, on his Earth, what, did Lois die? I mean, is he the Injustice Superman? Could that be? That could be something
interesting. I hope not, because there was the Superman or the Smallville comic book series, which was great. If nobody's ever read those, pick those up. If you were a fan of Smallville, they picked up next season. They literally, the comic book runs are called season 11, 12, 13, 14. I forget how far they went up, but they were called seasons.
I think 13.
They weren't, you know, volumes or anything like you would think of as a comic book. No, this was literally a continuation of Smallville. And it got into the things that we all wanted to see. Batman showing up, Robin, the Justice League getting formed, the true Justice League this go around. God, what else? I'm trying to remember. I got a few of them. It was during my time, I think, of not collecting them as or hitting the bookstores as much as I wanted.
Yeah, I dropped off after the Batman season. That was it. I was like, I'm done. That's all I wanted to see. I want to see Clark interact with Bruce, and I was good after that. But it'll be interesting to see. I hope he dons the cape. I mean, it'd be nice. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, he should. I mean, it basically says in that tweet, 10 years after Smallville. But I think, you know, as a fan of the Injustice games, it would be really cool if he was evil. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know.
No, because I think it'll change the feel of Smallville. Then
I know. Yeah. Like, what happened? He went evil? Like, yeah. That's true. So
I kind of ruined the decade.
Yeah, ruin everything for kids who actually grew up on watching Smallville. So, yeah. So he's going to come along with Erica as Lois, who I thought was great as Lois. And she's actually been in the CW universe. She played Kara Zor-El's mother in Supergirl for season 4, I believe? Or 5?
Yeah, I think it was 4.
So, because they replaced the original actress with her. She did a good job. So, be interesting. So, they're going to be officially in Crisis as Crisis continues to add more and more and more. And pretty soon, we'll be doing our Crisis story. I think we're going to be doing our Crisis stuff next month, starting little by little. So, that'll be fun. But, yeah, they're coming to Crisis. And, Mike, what do you got?
Nothing else. I think we are down to our last one, if I'm not sure of.
I think we are. So I guess I'll be doing this one. We got our first look at Superman Red Son in the animated universe. I think it's coming out the end of the year or next year. I'm not too sure. But we got our first photo image of it.
Red Son is...
Is it this year or next
2020
year?
2020 is the release date.
Okay, so probably the beginning of next year. But yeah, we got our first look at him. And got a look at the voice cast, too. Which always very nice. Roger Craig Smith is returning as Batman, I believe. And I think Jason Isaacs is voicing the Man of Steel. So, yeah. They're doing it. Red Son is coming, Mike. One of the stories we've talked about for the longest time. Because DC does their Elseworlds probably better than Marvel does. Because they actually use it. And, yeah. Red Son is coming.
It's one of my favorite Elseworlds. I mean, I was always a massive fan of Elseworld. If... There was a time where I couldn't stay into the runs as steady as I would. I still would always pick up the Elseworld. Whenever a new one would come, I'd grab one because I just the changing of the characters. I know sometimes people can call these Elseworlds and other things like it as kind of lazy writing because you're just taking a story that already exists and putting somebody else on top of it. And it can be kind of construed that way, but some of them were so entertaining. When you look at especially like Gaslight, was amazing. Red Sun, I'm trying to remember Bullet Speed or Speed Bullet was Clark or Kal-El had been found by the Waynes, and then the whole thing had consisted with Batman. You know, that basically he. Is mourning his parents' death, and he turns into Batman, but instead he's flying with Superman's powers dressed as Batman. Mm-hmm. And instead of the cowl having the opening in the mouth, it was a full black mask. You know, it's one of the, the cooler ones. And then I also think there was I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was the Green Lantern series where Batman got the ring.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is basically looking at a story they already told. But it's what they do on top of it that just—it's just always been amazing. And Red Son was one of the biggest ones. I mean, you were talking—was it Mark Miller? I think was on that one.
Yeah, Mark Miller did it. Yeah.
And 2003, and it was just amazing run. I think it was only like three issues on that.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot. It was like
It's one of those ones that I've always wanted. Gaslight, when they did Gaslight, I knew Red Sun was coming down the road. I was like, okay, if they're delving into Gaslight, they're gonna delve into
Gaslight was like their test run. Like they were like, you know what, if this works out, we're gonna start dropping more. And now they're doing Red Sun, and so we're gonna see. I think eventually we're gonna see all their multiverse stories, and it's gonna go to the animated world first because animated they do better than Marvel, like 10 times better. So, tangentially, all these stories are going to start dropping. And Red Son is just the latest in the lines. And just get ready. You're going to see more. You're just going to see more. This is just the beginning.
Well, you have to realize, like I said, they've already had a few out there already. The Elseworld ones, already out there. This is just a continuation of it. You look at, New Frontier. What's one of the other ones? The one I did, the Gaslight. even like Gods and Monsters kind of fell under a different kind of Elseworld. I think
Gods and Monsters was good. That's an underrated one. Yeah.
But you'll just look at some of those and just see what they're doing. I could almost put the Elseworlds if they throw them in there into the black label. Because those are some of the dark, so you get some dark ones. Like if one of the big ones I'm reading right now, and I love it to death. It's like it's probably one of the best Batman stories I've seen in a long time. Was White Knight, just amazing story. You know, Joker gets clean and becomes a better person. It starts helping Gotham out, and it's just like what the hell. And then now there's a second story, the Curse of the Black Knight. Or the White Knight, and that's going to include Azrael coming in. And
yep, your favorite. Yep.
Yeah, just so, and they're so great. Just in the way they're portraying Azrael, that he's actually an older person. You know, Azrael in the regular comic books was younger. But this one he's a war torn vet. You know, working with a elite unit, three two other people that are left of his unit. Just really good stuff, and I could see those stories fall into an Elseworld vibe.
I would agree with that. So that's, yeah. So Red Sun is coming and 2020. Look out for it and be on the look.
All right. Well, that will do it for our admissions ward. All right. So since we did talk about Elseworld just now, and we're talking about the Red Sun being part of the DC animated universe, Kane and I are going to break down. I'm just going to do a rundown of kind of the history of what the DC universe was, where it started, watching material, and just kind of how it flows. It started around 2007, but there were a lot of movies and stuff before the 2007 came out. I mean, you had a lot of the, you had the Timverse that we're all familiar with. He was still part of it when they jumped into doing these animated series. He was at the beginning of it, but they were gearing towards more adult-oriented material. A lot of it was, I think, the very first one was the Superman Doomsday, and me personally, not my favorite one. It was a retelling of the death of Superman.
Even the animation was kind of spotty too.
Yeah, it was. You can tell it was their first attempt.
They've learned since then.
Oh yeah, so. Definitely. Yeah, they've done a lot better. The voice actors on it, though. I mean, you were talking Adam Baldwin, Anne Heche. You know, just a bunch of great actors on that. But just the storyline just wasn't there. And they did have a few funny moments. And they had Superman beating up a mechanical spider, and there you see an animated Kevin Smith standing out there going, "Huh, a spider."
Dude, that was. Yeah, there were some nice little nods in that film.
But that's where it started, because I remember picking up the first one. I was like, oh man, this is great. DC animated series. What is this? And the universe just has built. From that, you had Justice League Frontier, something you and I have talked about before. It's one of my favorite books from DC. But the animated movie just captures it as best as it could. It's not a full story of what the book was, but it is a... pretty well handled book or movie.
It's pretty close. It's almost there.
After that, you had Batman Gotham Knight. I don't know if you remember, but this was the animated one that was tied into the Dark Knight Returns, or the Dark Knight.
I think it was just the Dark Knight. I think it was like four or five different stories, different artists, and different animations. So
it was very similar to the Animatrix. If you ever watched the Animatrix, it was just different storytellings of Batman, which I thought was a pretty interesting idea to approach it, because again, I just like you, I was a fan of the Animatrix, and at that time, anything more about the Matrix, or even at that time, anything more about Batman, I was all on board for.
Yeah, I just like the different type of artwork and the animation style that they use for that, and I think Kevin Conroy was voicing the Batman for all those stories, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. That was his first return.
Yeah, because he had retired Batman for a while, then he came back, and then he started doing that. And then I think he started doing the Arkham games after that, too. So, it was kind of a return for Kevin Conroy, because, we miss him.
Yeah, I mean, he nails the voice perfect. Just when you watch him, especially, you know, seeing him do it just throws you off.
Yeah, his mannerisms, just the way he doesn't really disguise, like, his Batman and Bruce Wayne voice are not that different, you know, just, it's just the way he reflects it. You know, the Bruce being a little bit tad, you know, a tad higher than his Batman voice being, you know, a tad lower, but not too crazy like Christian Bale, but yeah. Just enough that, you know, there's a slight difference.
You gotta fear me.
Yeah, it just sounds like he's bad coughs.
Save me. Whiskey and gargling glass.
Whiskey Batman.
Get over here. The next one was actually Wonder Woman. A loose interpretation of the George Perez post-crisis on Infinite Earth Wonder Woman. It has no ties into the one that we know now. In fact, there's another Wonder Woman movie coming out next year as well, and that's going to be like a retelling of her origin story again. That one had Kerry Russell on that one, Nathan Fillion, who I think this was his first one for them to come in. You know, Nathan became a staple to the DCU. If anybody's a Nathan fan out there, he's all over it, and probably the best Green Lantern out there, and probably the good, you know, main reason for Kevin Smith to mention that it would be great to see him in was it the Suicide Squad?
As the Green Lantern, yeah. That would be perfect. I heard that. I mean, that's just wishful thinking. So.
Oh, it is. Yeah, no, it is. I mean, like I said, it was just a fanboy's wish. That would be a good idea. But next one we had was Green Lantern First Light. Interesting. Well, this is the kind of the take, the origin story of Hal Jordan. This is one of my favorite ones for it, because the Green Lantern isn't really delved into that deeply in the DC universe. That's the one, or the DC animated universe. That's just the one thing I think they lack in.
Yeah, they haven't really touched on. I think they had an animated series for a while, which was done in 3D, and that was okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, they haven't really, he's been more of a side character, just as like he was in the animated series of Justice League and this movie as well. So I like this movie. Not one of my faves, but you know, it was pretty good.
I mean, later on when we get into the bigger series, because there is a huge series that you have to kind of follow. You don't have to, but they you know, you should follow. He becomes the comedic foil and a unwilling partner of Bruce Wayne. You know,
their interactions. It's are so good.
Yeah, I mean, so they do in a way kind of give him a little bit more later on, but like as individual movies, he's had two. He had First Flight, and then there's another one that comes a little bit later on. Yeah. Bruce Wayne, Superman and Batman, Public Enemy.
Yeah, this is where we start getting into the good stuff.
This is like a borderline world's finest. I mean, it's not. It's an interesting take, but it's. I loved it for the interaction with the characters, because this is the first time like we've seen like Hawkman in a bigger scene. I think like the one scene I remember the most out of that is that one battle scene where all these villains are just bombarding him.
Yeah, basically the Injustice Society, or the, what do they call it? The Legion of Doom. Basically the Legion of Doom attacking Batman, Superman. It was kind of cool.
And then, I mean, because you had you had Captain Atom, Major Force, Black Lightning, Power Girl, probably one of the first and only times we really see Power Girl.
And Major Force, too. They made Major Force sort of somewhat of a villain in this movie, which is kind of cool.
And I think one of the best ones, I did the interaction with Toy Man.
That was great. That was fantastic.
Power Girl's like, nah, you guys go ahead and talk to him. I don't want to talk to him, because, I mean, if anybody knows Power Girl, she's your typical female superhero, big, you know, bosoms and not wearing much.
The outfit is leaves a lot to be desired.
And Toy Man, it has a small crush.
Just a little.
Next one that they run into, and one of, I will have to put in, and I'm pretty sure you're going to be up there with me, like the top five of these movies, Justice League Crisis on Two Earths.
Yes, that's up there for me. It's right up there. Oh, amazing. So good.
They capture the feel of it. They're introducing the crime syndicate. You get to do, and the voice acting on this was amazing. Mark Harmon, William Baldwin, you had Vanessa Marshall. Let's see who else was on here. Had James Patrick Stewart, James Wood.
James Woods as Owlman. That was what got me. I was like, wow. Because I never imagined we'd ever have like an Owlman, like in any version, like a live action. Hopefully they'll do it one day, but in animated. But his voice just suited Owlman. It was so good. Ugh.
Just dry. If anybody knows who James Wood is, it's just that very dry, monotone kind of. And he does it through the end to the most important moments in the movie where he's just like, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It was great. And I think this is about the time they were starting to catch their stride. They've been kind of feeling themselves out throughout, you know, this time. You know, this is still, you know, we're looking at this one dropped 2010. So they've been going about 3 years in the DC animated universe. They were tying one or two together here and there. You know, they were, let's see, what was it? The Crisis on Infinite Earth, and then there's another one that ties in, but it doesn't tie into like the overall arcing storyline until, you know, they're about ready to start jumping in. Probably another one of my top ones, because like I said, they were just picking up the stride, was Batman Under the Red Hood. I think for anybody that has ever liked Jason Todd or liked that story, this one hit home. And of course, this is where I think a lot of people got the Jensen Ackles as Red Hood, was from this.
They still get it. I mean, this is where it started,
I think, was because of this. When you heard that voice and you're like, he can just throw a mask on and we don't need to see his face.
I think last year for Halloween, he dropped on his Instagram that he actually went as the Red Hood for Halloween. If you ever get a chance to see it on his Instagram page, the costume he wore is freaking amazing.
Yeah. He's done that a couple years. That's not the first time he's done that.
I know, but like he just did it. And I was like, oh my God, why can't this be live action? It sucks because I don't think he's going to do it. He's a little bit too old now to be the Red Hood, but man, ugh, missed opportunity right there.
Well, again, they can pull a Darth Vader on him. Yeah. To be honest, he doesn't have to be him. The voice is what really, for me, is what brought it over.
Yeah, because it works so well. I mean, you keep thinking of him as Dean from Supernatural, but when he did Jason Todd, I was like, oh, that's it. That's Jason Todd. That's Red Hood. That's what I want. Give it to me. More.
One is probably one of the better ones, I think, for voice actors. They're not like A-celebrity, you know, or A-level celebrities. You had Bruce Greenwood on here, Bruce did Batman. You had Jensen doing Red Hood and Jason Todd. Neil Patrick Harris, I thought, knocked it out as Nightwing.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, he was great. And Bruce Greenwood, a very underrated Bruce Wayne Batman, by the way.
Yeah.
Excellent voice actor.
He's right there next to just do a blank there.
I can't think of his name either. It's not.
Yeah,
I know it's
just,
not
we just talked about him.
It was not Mark Harmon. It's not Kevin Conroy.
No, it is Kevin. Kevin. Right next to Kevin. Sorry, I was trying to say Kevin. Right next to Kevin, I think Bruce is my second favorite when it comes to the voice of Batman.
And Jason Romero is not bad too. So.
He's not bad, but like I said, if we're gonna, Kevin's number one, Bruce is second, because I just think he captures that about him. And then of course, I mean, we all love and will always love Mark Hamill as Joker, but this one here, John DiMaggio, kills Joker.
He did a great job.
I would probably do the ranking the same way, Mark, then Joe, because Joe really captures that there's a scene in there where Joker's like caught in the middle of an argument. He's kind of the bystander. And his personality and how he's like, just like this, like I said, he's just a third person in this argument. He's like really not that involved, but he wants the argument to escalate. It's perfect. And then just the whole thing with at the beginning when he takes out Jason, it's just that. Tell me, is it this one that hurts, or is it? It's just that attitude he has.
It was a different Joker from what we're used to, and it was not as, you know, I guess, you know, Hamill's more over the top. This one was a little bit more subdued.
Yeah.
And it worked for the movie, and it worked for him. And that the beginning scene with the crowbar, like I said, he was good at being the Joker that was kind of like, yeah, as you said, the middleman, and he played it perfectly. And yeah. DiMaggio did knock it out of the park. And
yeah, I think he was the creepier Joker, the more demonic, not demonic, but you know, sick and twisted. You know, the the Hamill one's always been the fun kind of, hey, you know, I'm here. This one was a little bit more darker, and I might want to say almost more gangster.
I would agree with that, sir.
Yeah. Next one after that was the Superman and Batman Apocalypse. Now, this was a sequel to the one we mentioned earlier, Public Enemy. So these two are tied directly together. It came in as kind of a borderline sequel because they're still in that time frame. But this is where in this one, and I love this one, is and it's just probably one of your favorite ones as well. This is where they introduce Supergirl into the storyline.
Yeah, because she crashes
on
Earth at this time. Yeah, because her pod just showed up. So
This is where they introduce her, and I love the story between her and Clark. And Bruce is just not vibing, with what's going on.
Doesn't trust her.
Nope, yeah. Does not trust her at all. And probably one of the best scenes. I know you love it, and I'm gonna let you go. Because it is. It's one of mine. But
if you're talking about the scene on the farm. Were
no,
they ba-
no.
No? Oh.
I was talking about the one moment when Darkseid finds out who the true badass is between Superman.
Oh, that's a great scene, too.
Where Batman
that's
arms
a,
oh. every one of the bombs on the Darkseid, on Apocalypse, and tells Darkseid, I've changed your code. You let her go, or I'm going to let everything blow up. And Darkseid's just like, the Kryptonian wouldn't take that risk. You as a human are willing to kill your own kind to win. And it just put Batman's
on a different level.
Mental state. Yeah, it's just like, I'm like, that's Batman. He's willing to win at all costs.
And he's talking to a god, too, which is kind of crazy.
He doesn't give two shits.
He does not give a damn, But yeah, that scene was great, but I thought you were talking about the other one, like, towards the end. That came out of nowhere.
That reminds me very much of the fight scene that we saw last night in Man of Steel.
Yes.
That fight scene at the farm. Very reminiscent of that.
Very reminiscent. Wow. Yeah. I didn't put those two together, but yeah, they're very close. Close.
When did this come out? Yeah, that could have been taken off of that. They may have like used that as kind of a chart, to say.
Hey, Zach, check this out.
Yep. And this one was on this one we had Tim Daly as Superman again. Probably one of my favorite Superman voice.
I loved him, and he was great in the animated series too. A big fan of his from Wings too. You got to watch that TV show.
Yeah.
He's great on that. But Tim was really good as a Superman. Very underrated too, because he's almost like what Kevin Conroy was to Batman. Tim is to Superman. So definitely both up there.
Next one is I think one that I've talked about in our comic books to read before you die is All Star Superman. Great movie, fun to watch. It doesn't it's just like any book you read, and they're not when the movie comes out you're like, oh, they missed this. There were certain things they missed in All Star when they did the movie, but it's almost on point. I mean, it's as close as you're gonna get, and the pieces that are missing I'm not upset about at all.
Has a feel to it. I mean, not directly like the comic, but it's like you said. It's just, it captures that feel, like, of Superman. Like, it's like the old school Superman, This is the flyby guy. This is the nice dude. He's doing nice things, and he's dying. And he knows he's going to die. And it's just like all the things that he does, he relives his past. It's just great. It's not the comic, you're right, but it's pretty damn close.
I think it hits the major rhythms in the comic. And the few things that they didn't put in there weren't that major. But I was like, okay, I can go without that one. Next one we have Green Lantern, Emerald Knights. This one I think is kind of funny because it's just short stories about a lot of different. I think it's like a total of five Green Lanterns. They do a backstory on Kilowog. They do a backstory on I can never remember her name, the princess. Oh, shoot. Can never remember her name.
I forgot. I can't. I don't have my access to my laptop. So I know my I'll tell you what my favorite story out of all of them was the Mojo one. That was my favorite.
Yeah.
I love the moment. Like, she's like, oh, yeah, he's the greatest. Like, you don't know who he is. And I had forgotten who Mojo was. And then when I was watching, I was like, oh, Mojo's the planet. Oh, and then you see him shape as a Green Lantern ring. I thought that was kind of cool. So,
wow, I have never realized that this voice cast was this is knocking me out of the park right now. I guess I never really looked at the voice. I just always enjoyed the stories, and I never really truly thought about it. Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern, again, awesome job. Elizabeth Moss as Arisia. Jason Isaac as Sinestro. Kelly Hugh as Lara. Henry Rollins as Kilowog. I did not
Henry
know.
Henry Rollins?
Yeah, he did the voice of Kilowog on there. Now I'm going to have to go watch this after now we're done. And then as Blofungo.
Blofungo?
Character Blofungo that's in there. That's Roddy Piper.
Rest in peace, Piper.
Man. Yes, I was like, I did not. I'm like, this is so blowing my mind.
That's interesting.
And
I have to watch this again now that you mentioned his voice.
Yeah, I just kind of run it over. I'm like, I didn't realize that there were that many. I mean, Roddy Piper, I want to go back and watch it about with Blofungo. And then our Arnold Vassallo, he was Abensur in this. So, yeah, a very interesting cast group. So just for that, you guys definitely need to check that out, because Henry Rollins does a pretty bang-up job on Kilowog. I thought it was just a normal guy that usually does his voice, honestly.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was Henry. That's pretty good voice acting. Yeah.
Next one we have about Batman Year One, Frank Miller's. It's just a retelling of the Frank Miller. Again, not quite the full story, but it nails it. It gets your story across.
To me, that movie is all about scenes. Yes. There's two scenes that stand out in that movie. Actually, three. The beginning when he comes home, when he at the grave and he's just chopping wood and he's mourning his parents' death. The second one is when he drops into, I believe, Carmine Falcone's party, and he said the citizens of Gotham have eaten well far too long. Tonight you will serve some. I forgot the line, but it's a great line. And he just basically he shows up at the dinner table, and he covers the food, and the candle goes out. And the third one is when he's trapped in that condemned building. That, to me, is like the movie's not. I don't think it's great. Not one of their better ones. The book is obviously a little bit better, but to me, those three scenes kind of like, okay, you know, not the greatest movie, but the scenes are okay.
I think probably one of my favorite ones in that is Gordon taking that beating from the other cops,
because
he's not willing to take a taste, and then he gets his revenge.
Oh yeah,
that's funny. Yeah, that. To me, that's a deeper scene to me than anything, because he's like, no, I'm here to make a difference, and you can try to mess with me, but I'm gonna push right back just as hard.
And he did,
and he does, and the cop won't even say who did it, because he didn't wear a mask. You know, the cops had jumped him, wore a mask, but when he did it, he didn't wear a mask. He just went out with a bat and
beat the crap out of him. I was like, wow, was it this guy Breaking Bad, the voice of Jim Gordon?
Gordon was on that one. Bryan Cranston was Gordon on that one, and then Benjamin McKenzie was Batman.
Benjamin McKenzie, who becomes Jim Gordon in Gotham. Kind of crazy.
Yeah. Then next one would be Justice League Doom. Now, this is a direct sequel to Crisis on Earth 2. So this one takes place, and it's basically the Justice League Tower of Babel. Doom is just that Bruce has a plan for everybody. This shows you Bruce's mindset on everything, that just in case he doesn't trust anybody.
Nope.
And it's one of those moments that you understand him. I guess it's one of those moments where, you know, we were talking about, you know, we understand a villain. We understand why Bruce did this. Bruce isn't really the villain, but we understand why he has a plan, for you never know if somebody goes off.
Yeah.
Especially having a superpower.
Yeah, and I like the scene where he finds out what's going on, and I think he's talking to Alfred. He's like, "Alfred, the Justice League is under attack. By who? By me."
Yep.
And I was like, "Oh, that's fucking Batman."
Yeah, yeah, and it's just great to watch and see what he does. And I think the ending was perfect. You know, he just finally was like, "If you guys don't agree with this, I'm sorry, then I'm leaving." But Clark approaches him and says, I see what you mean, and if there's anybody that's going to take me out, I'd rather it be you.
But then he says the other line, which follows. He's like, I'm curious. You had a plan to take us all out.
Yeah,
well, what if you went rogue? What was your plan? He's like, I did have a plan. It's called the Justice League, and that's how it ended. I'm like, that's Batman. I was like, that says everything up and ties it in a nutshell. Boom, great, just great. I love this movie, by the way. Yes.
Yeah, this one. Yeah, that is one of the top ones. And again, it that one ties directly into another one you and I both like, the Crisis on Two Earths. So definitely watch those two together. It's a very good one. It's more of a psychological one. Both of them are very psychological in what they are, what their overall story arc is about. It's not just all action and beating somebody up. There's stories behind it. You know, again, and you understand why Owlman is doing what he's doing.
Yep, there's always a reason for everything being done.
Next one is probably one of my up there. It's my list. I want to keep it at five, but I have trouble with it. The Dark Knight Returns. It's just simply the adaptation. It's a two-parter of the Frank Miller story, and I loved it. I loved the animation on it. They captured Frank Miller. The art on that Frank Miller story, perfect.
Down to
the mutant leader's enormous, annoying looking nipples.
Yeah.
And that pissed me off. I was like, really? You had to get that one down, did you?
Yeah, his gigantic shark teeth. And
yeah, just, I mean, just everything.
I mean, to me, like, the one thing about this, like, part one and two, I mean, I guess you wanted to, put them all as one movie. That's great because they're both great. The voice cast. Peter Weller is Batman as older Bruce.
Yeah.
I thought was phenomenal. Not good, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And when I read that comic, one of the best parts about that comic is the inner monologue that Bruce has with himself. That's one of the biggest things that the movie didn't do, but they kind of like did that monologue outright in his dialogue. And I thought that was fantastic because that comic is all about inner monologue. You know, when he suits up for the first time, when he's actually on a rooftop, he's like, I can break this guy, three ribs. Six bones, like he's describing what he's doing inside of his head. That inner monologue to me made that comic. And this one just kind of like threw it out there. And for a while kind of threw me off, but I was like, oh, they kind of plussed it up and I'm good with this. So.
Yeah, this was actually done. The film was directed by Man of Steel storyboarder Jay Oliva.
Jay Oliva, yeah.
Yeah. So definitely somebody that's well versed in the comic book lore. And the last one, and I'm going to call this one the last one of the beginning series, is Superman Unbound. Good story. Not my favorite, honestly. It wasn't one of my favorite ones to begin with, but it's basically the story arc of Superman Brainiac from Jeff Johns. And it's okay. It's not my favorite one. The story of Superman Brainiac is a great comic. I just didn't like the movie that much. It didn't really grab me.
It was okay. I think you're right. It was all right. I think the voice of Brainiac was really good. I think he was, I think that's John Noble, who was the voice of Brainiac, if I'm not mistaken. Noble, yeah. And I thought he was great. But the movie was okay. It wasn't like the best thing in the world. It wasn't the worst thing in the world. But I just thought it was okay. Nothing spectacular. And, just all right.
So that ends that first series. Now, the next movie in the line is Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox. And basically what The Flashpoint Paradox indicates is a restart of not just the DC universe in the story, but also a restart and a reboot of the animated universe. So when we consider DC universe animated, it starts here. The stories from here on out are all intertwined, except for a few of the odd ones. The Flash, Batman by the Gaslight, one Arkham one, I think, of the Arkham. Is it Assault on Arkham? No, yes, Assault on Arkham yeah. Is outside. Gods and Monsters. They're all outside the realm, but the rest of these are a movie series that you could basically say this is DC's Avengers 10-year run. So if you guys are wanting to really delve in and get into some great story arcs that continue, they did loosely base it off of the New 52, the heavily in design from the New 52, but some of the stories broke away from that. They went to older stories. But Flashpoint is an amazing place to start. That one ranks up there with probably one of my favorites. Just for like you, I know you're going to make the big point that you're going to you have Thomas Wayne. The first time we ever see a Thomas Wayne.
Yeah.
Especially as a Batman.
Oh, man, that was a great scene, especially when he shows up in Thomas's Batcave, and it's so different. It has like the gun, and he's just he's a totally different Batman.
Oh yeah,
he's not even close to Bruce. I mean, the costume is different, the way he does things is different, and you know, he's a huge alcoholic. It's just, I mean, there's a Wayne Casino. I'm like, okay, this is different.
Yeah, they want the full route with him. And if nobody's ever read Flashpoint, definitely pick that up.
Pick it up, read it. I forgot how many issues it is. I think it goes over through a couple different characters, but it's good.
They have Flashpoint, but then there is Flashpoint the second. They're the ones that go over the other characters, which those are pretty good. I picked up the Batman one, which delves more into him in the casino and who's running the casino. Like, he's got Penguin running the casino for him. Like, really, it's like really cool stuff on those.
Definitely got to check those out.
But so there are certain things that happen in this that will carry over to 5-6 movies from now. So that's why I'm saying, you know, this, you have to watch. You know, something happens in here to Professor Zoom that we don't see until later on.
A couple years later.
And it's not even on a Justice League movie. It was in a Suicide Squad movie, Hell to Pay.
Yeah.
And it ties directly back in. So this is, like I said, this is your, if you want to bookmark, say, this is where I'm going to start, this is the place. So you have that. You jump into Justice League War, which is basically the direct sequel to, like I said, Flashpoint. That picks up as Justice League forms, and they're all meeting each other. You know, we see, like we were saying earlier, we see Batman and Green Lantern having their little, you know, back and forth conversation. It just amazing to watch. You have Alan Tudyk as Superman, which still throws me off whenever I hear him doing.
It's kind of odd. Choice, but yeah, he was okay. I mean, not one of the better ones, but this is the first one I think Jason O'Mara is Batman. If I stand corrected, so
I believe so. Yeah, I think because again, like I said, yeah, this was they're starting. They wanted to start fresh, so they were getting some newer actors. This was also, you know, Justin Kirk did Green Lantern. This wasn't.
Was it Nathan?
No. Oh, okay. Nope.
Their interactions was the best part of the movie.
Yeah.
To me.
Then after War, we jump into Son of Batman, where we find out, you know, Bruce has an illegitimate child.
Great.
I think I love this story. I think it's really great to see what they're doing. And then it is a straight, you know, storytelling from Grant Morrison's Batman and Son.
Yeah, it's good. I'm just not a fan of the Damian character, but you know,
you're not. Yeah, I know you have your issues.
I just have my issues with Damian, but as a whole, the movie's good. It's good. That's all I'll say. I like it. Sorry.
Then after that, we jump directly into Thorn or the Throne of Atlantis, and this literally takes place moments into, you know, just I think it's Son of Batman, Justice League, and then the Court of Owls, the Batman versus Robin. Those literally take place within months of each other, and then there's a few that take place within weeks of each other. Because Son of Batman, and then Justice League, Throne of Atlantis. That's what it is. It's War, Son of Batman, and Throne of Atlantis all take place within a week, because you have Son of Batman, and then you have Justice League, Throne of Atlantis, where we introduce Aquaman. But at the very beginning of that, you see them making a correction to the sign for the Hall of Justice.
Yep.
Because originally it was called, they were calling themselves the Super Seven. Shazam.
Thanks. We're the Super Seven.
No. And so those three take place. I mean, again, we get introduced to, to Arthur, to the world of Atlantis. Very, very reminiscent of what they did in the Aquaman movie with Jason Momoa.
Very similar.
Then there is, and I didn't know if you knew this or not, but there's a short animated clip of just called Nightwing and Robin.
No, I didn't know that. Is that based off the Son of Batman?
No, it is taking place, if you remember, in I think it was Justice League Throne of Atlantis, Green Lantern interrupts Batman on a pursuit.
Yeah, I remember that.
This, it shows, okay, he had to go deal Justice League stuff. He turned the case over to Nightwing and Robin, and it shows them finishing it up. Oh. So it's kind of a cool little thing. It shows them working together, little banter back and forth. Because there is, you know, some issues with, you know, Nightwing, you know, wanting to turn over the mantle of Robin over to to Damien. I was going back to the other one we jumped over on Son of Batman, where just that banter back and forth between Damien and Nightwing.
It's hysterical. You know, one of the better things. I just like that Nightwing kicks beast the hell out of him. So.
Yeah. Well, as you kind of look at it, he did hog tie him, but when you look at Nightwing, Nightwing got the hell cut out of him.
Yeah.
So it's like, did he really win?
I don't know.
But but you get to see them kind of interacting a little bit closer. Then the next one you have is Batman versus Robin, which is basically the Court of Owls storyline.
Yeah,
when you really watch it.
You could have called it Court of Owls.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't, but they called it Batman versus Robin. Great story. I think this hits the Court of Owls storyline pretty well. I think it hits it spot on.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of a long storyline, but yeah, kind of like it for like what 45 minutes, an hour, 30 minutes the movie is.
Yeah,
they kind of like threw everything in there, and it went pretty well. It was solid. I liked it. Yeah. You know, kind of makes me want to see Court of Owls movie. Sorry.
That's why the Nightwing and Robin short at the very end of that, you see the Talon watching what they're doing.
Yeah.
So it hints at what's coming in that little, look it up on YouTube. It's when I say a short, it's 1 minute and like 7 seconds. It's very quick. So you definitely check it out. Next one is Batman Bad Blood. I think that's a good story on this one. It's different. Well, it's not my favorite one so far of these. Flashpoint's probably going to be up there. Son of Batman for me, and I did like the Court of Owls one.
That was good.
But Bad Blood's an introduction of Kane for Batwoman. Also, Batwing comes in to show off, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I liked the end where you see the Batman
family,
Incorporated
yeah.
basically, you know, being formed. So I did kind of like that.
Well, Batman's not, well, I don't want to spoil anything, but you don't see Batman for a while in this movie. Well, you do, but you don't.
Yeah, and again, this is one of the ones, the one part I did like about this was you seeing Nightwing and Robin, you know, Nightwing being Batman dressed up like him. And if you notice, he wore a different style of Batman costume in that he was wearing the Batman costume with the yellow in the background of the symbol, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, and Damian called him out on it. He's like, "Yeah, who are you trying to intimidate, or who are you trying to?" Yeah, so
yeah, you can't fool anybody with that voice. after that was Justice League versus Teen Titans. That was fun.
I like the fact that they actually showed the Titans, Starfire, so hot. Yep. And and the Titans themselves and the kind of throwing
Titans themselves. You see Raven. You see Raven battling with you know. With her father.
Yeah. Trigon. And you see, I think Damian goes into that. Does he go into hell and he fights Ra's al Ghul again? I think
they all go into hell. Yeah. They all have to go in there. And yeah, he has to end up fighting Ra's to save Raven. So a good introduction to the Teen Titans to see where they live, what they're doing. What are they?
Yeah.
Next one after. What's up?
No, I said that's pretty good because I think that was the intro to the Titans, too.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, that was the very first. We hadn't had a Teen Titans movie as of yet. Next one is Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay. This is the one I was talking about that does a direct tie-in to Flashpoint. That there's some things that happen in Flashpoint are showing up here in this one because it's saying something happened. You know, somebody knows that there was another universe. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of all tied in together, which I love that. And this was like smack in the middle of everything, of all of them.
I dug it, man. I liked how you saw the different type of characters from the Suicide Squad in there that we didn't see in the movie. And the reveal at the end with the Reverse Flash was really cool because it kind of tied into Flashpoint. I'm like, oh, okay. So that's why he's looking for that artifact. Yeah. So it just made sense.
Yeah, that definitely did. Now the next one. Probably one of my favorite. I couldn't tell you how many times I watched this thing. Justice League Dark.
Good one. Very good one.
Amazing. If anybody's like Kane and I have always talked about the darker side of the DC universe. This is it. Zatanna, Constantine, Deadman. I think who else was in there? A Swamp Thing was in there as well.
I think he was in there for like a minute, and then that was it.
He was. It wasn't a big one, but Swamp Thing was there. We got him in the animated world. And you just And you have to watch Batman dealing with this. This man of science and of logic has to let go and has to trust magic, which he doesn't.
He's never trusted magic. Yeah. And just seeing him, it almost like, I get why they put Batman in the movie. You know, you put Batman in the movie, it sells a little bit better. But I thought it kind of made sense because, you know, he is the connection from the Justice League. You throw him in there, you think he's kind of like a fish out of water, which basically he is. But as the movie goes along, he fits in more and more with the Justice League. Dark, well, which is kind of crazy.
To be honest, if you read there's a Justice League Dark series, and it's actually not Batman, it's Wonder Woman. And Wonder Woman would make more sense.
Oh, yeah, Wonder Woman makes a lot more sense.
She's magic based. So that was when I read the book, I was like, and then I saw the movie, I was like, Batman, I like him in there because he has those moments. You know, I think probably my favorite one is when the soul reapers are
around. Oh, that's the best one.
You know, this one's vexed us and has gotten away too many times. And he doesn't see these things, but he just goes boo. And scares him away. just kind of tells you, you know, exactly, you know, what he is. If anybody's a fan of the Constantine TV series, it is the voice of Constantine.
Matt Ryan.
But also the actor that's in there that plays, God, I'm trying to remember the guy's name.
Chaz? No.
Where is it? Hold on. Shoot. I had it here. It went away. It was Constantine's friend that he went there that had cancer.
Oh,
the skinny little dude.
I forgot. I know what you're talking about, but yeah,
Richie. The guy that played Richie in Constantine the TV series. That's the same guy that does the voice too, for that.
Okay.
Because when I first heard his voice, I was like, that sounds familiar, and then I turned on Constantine to watch the show, and I'm like, oh, and they even copied how he looks. He's skinny. He's got that moldy little spiky hair and the beard. So they copied him perfect. So we also get to see Etrigan, which I thought was great to see Etrigan in this and have Jason Blood.
Blood rocking out. Yeah.
So that's one of my up there with one of my favorite ones. Next one, I think this one's on you. Teen Titans: The Justice or the Judas Contract.
Yep. One of my favorite runs of a comic by George Perez. I thought they did it great. They did everything I wanted them to do with Tara, with Deathstroke. I mean, throwing Damian in there didn't really bother me that much. I mean, it did, but it didn't. But it was solid the way they did it. They just changed up the storyline a little bit, but you still had the betrayal of Tara. Then you still had her. Redemption at the end.
Yep.
And it just shows everything that's so good. You even have Brother Blood is in this.
Yep.
Brother Blood shows up with Deathstroke. He's working with him, so I thought that was kind of cool.
And you also get Kevin Smith again doing a podcast.
Doing a podcast. Talking to
Beast Boy. Yep. Which I thought was cool. The only thing I didn't like about this movie, I think it nailed everything. It hit the right points for the storyline. The music. Them doing that little dance off thing. I was like, okay, I know it's a teen cartoon, you know, the basis of it, but I just didn't need to really see that.
Yeah, part. I could have done without that.
Then the next one, which actually, these are two movies that were actually released, and the only two that have been released in the theaters for the DC Animated Universe. These two have been released: The Death of Superman and The Reign of the Superman. So everything else has been DVD or streaming. These two movies were the only two that ever were released actually in the theaters to go see. And it's just a retelling of The Death of Superman. They corrected themselves from the very beginning. 2007, Batman or Superman Doomsday. That was their attempt at The Death of Superman. This was the done right. It's two movies. You know, you're talking about 3 hours, 3 hours total for both of them, but it's a good telling of, you know, the Doomsday and Superman moments, watching the Justice League get their asses whipped and everything. And then you see the death, then the funerals, and then everybody, the world mourning and the rebirth of these four Supermen.
Basically like the comic. I mean, yeah. It is like, I just like the fact that they actually made Doomsday a menacing, terrifying, yes, just creature. Especially, and they had him in that his space gear, and it slowly comes off, and it slowly shows
just
what Doomsday looks
like.
Just like
the book. Yeah,
just like the book.
Yep. Everything is just...
They even had that scene in the forest where he kills the kids and that family. Yep. I'm like, wow. They just make Doomsday what Doomsday should be. You know,
yeah, complete... it's what he was in the book. I mean, there's even a moment in the book where a deer comes by, and it's the little deer just, you know, oh, what are you? And he gets close enough, and Doomsday just grabs his neck and snap.
Yeah, breaks it. Yeah, that's that's Doomsday. So yeah. And the Justice League couldn't beat him. They're like, they got their asses kicked.
And I think what, for me as a comic book fan, watching the Reign of Superman, what I loved is when they were showing the news clippings and pictures taken of these Supermen. Those were the covers from the books. I was like, oh, you know, I had my complete geek out moment on those.
I geeked out in the post credit scene for the first movie where they were showing the Superman arriving.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, because I think this is like the first animated DC movie that had like a post credit scene. They both did, actually.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, yes. I'd have to go back and see. I'm pretty sure there might have been one or two. But and then next one, after the Reign of Superman, we go back to Constantine, City of Demons. This is more of a sort of origin. It revisits the origin of Constantine. His friend Chaz has come visiting. Constantine has been locked in an asylum. And Chaz comes and visits because his daughter's been, something's going on with his daughter. If anybody, again, we're going to go back to the Constantine show. The first season, the first episode is pretty much it, but it's extended out. You get I love probably one of my favorite ones. You get the visit from the nightmare nurse, which is great to see her in there. And you just watch Chaz and Constantine running through trying to help his daughter. And also at the same time, Constantine is trying to get past the Newcastle incident as well.
Yeah, that's one of those things I wish they would dive into. And I think eventually they will, is that Newcastle incident that he keeps dropping, that he's dropped on the series.
That's what this does.
Oh, does
this
it?
Does. Okay. This does, yeah. That's what I'm saying. I know you haven't gotten a chance to watch this one.
No, I haven't.
This was actually a weird one. This was on the CW. What's there's an app.
CW Seed?
There's CW and, yeah, something. Yeah, Seed. This was actually a short. Like they released them out in like little 15-minute clips out there, but you can also just find it online. But it references, and you understand what happened in Newcastle, that he was a young kid, thought he was a good magician, came across another guy who thought he was a good magician and summoned a demon, and Constantine tried a spell which backfired, and in turn the demon took this girl, and so it takes place and it gets resolved in this. Has a pseudo happy ending, sort of, you know, everything, you know, pans out, but Constantine has to lose a few things before it pans out. So definitely it's a good watch if you're a Constantine fan and you like, again, the dark side of DC.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out now.
And then the last one of this series going on, there's been a few other movies that I've jumped over, but this is a full series. Everything from Flashpoint to now is all the DC animated series, you know, of movies. Is Batman Hush, and that just came out. I enjoyed it. It was a little different.
Yeah.
The twist.
Yeah.
There was
a little twisty in there, which,
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of the twist. I liked up to the twist.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I like everything up to it, because I knew it was going to change, like, midway through the movie. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, so... I mean, I'm not going to spoil it because I'm not allowed to spoil things anymore, but I'll just say, if you read the comic and you think you know who a certain person is, it's not. And
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that.
But yeah, just watch it. Just check it out. Hush, and again, I'm going to pump them up again at DC Universe streaming on there. They're on there. $7.99, guys. You can get everything we've talked about is on there, except one, Unbound. I cannot find Unbound. But everything else is out there.
Yep, good stuff. But yeah, Hush was great up to that twisty turn, and I like the relationship between Batman and Catwoman. I thought whoever voiced Catwoman, she did great. She did great. I think that was Jennifer Morrison because it sounded
just like her. Yeah.
So yeah, yep. Check it out.
So yeah, definitely. And also coming down the pike, we did talk about Superman Red Sun is coming out next year. We have Wonder Woman Bloodline coming out October. So at the end of October, that one will be dropping. Again, it's kind of a a solo Wonder Woman origin storyline. So it's not, I don't think it's going to be delving into the main one. After that, release also in 2020. So we're going to have 1, 2, 3 new DC Universe movies dropping in 2020. Superman Red Sun, Justice League Dark, Apocalypse War.
Can't wait for that one.
That one I'm so looking forward
that
to.
That one was teased at the end of the reign of Superman, I believe.
Yes, it was.
As a post-credit scene. So that's going to be something that I was like, oh, they're doing Darkseid War?
Yeah, and then announced at San Diego Comic-Con, an animated film chronicling Clark Kent's early years as Superman, basically kind of a year one of him, but it'll be Superman Man of Tomorrow.
I love the name. Yep. Great.
So there'll be some, you know, some coming down, but definitely check those out, guys. That is pretty much all of them. I think there's only one that we didn't mention, and that one's a little sensitive to both you and I. Batman the Killing Joke.
Yeah.
Oh. It kind of falls under the hush category. Great story, except for like one thing did not have to happen. I don't know why it was put in there.
How can I say this? I have to try to be nice.
No, you don't.
I'll say this because I want people to watch it. I will say that just look, everything that has to do with the Killing Joke comic is great. There's some other things in there that should have never been in there that, to me...
Let me make it... There's a love story that should not be in there. And that's it. Yeah, okay. Let's leave it at that.
Just leave it at that.
Let them suffer like we did. Just be prepared. There's a love story. If you see those two people together, just fast forward.
Please. It's just made... But watch it. It's a good movie other than that. So that's what I'll say. Perfect.
All right. Very good. So that is just kind of our subject. I know this one's going to be a little bit longer show today, but that's okay. Because DC Universe is a big subject. I mean, I was expecting it to be a little bit longer. But it's, just get in there, guys, and watch it. If everybody's going, people that are out there going, man, I wish DC would get their shit together, watch this stuff. These are PG-13, and sometimes they kind of borderline R-rated. Mm-hmm. You take there's one I didn't really cover because it falls in under that weird category, Batman and Harley Quinn. You know, there's a few scenes with Nightwing and her, you know, tearing up the
sheets.
There's like again also I think in one of I think it's Arkham Asylum the Arkham Asylum Suicide Squad one, there's a
which to me should have been what the Suicide live action movie should have been.
Yeah,
that been. They should have just saw that movie and just done it verbatim because that movie, it says Batman attack on Arkham, but Batman is hardly in it. Spoilers. I mean, I hate he's hardly in. He's in it, but he's not in it. It's the story is just great. Just great. Just watch that movie. It's not part of the run, but it's like a one-off and it's really good. I would definitely recommend that one.
Oh, perfect. All right. Yeah. Well, I've got a few read along, so we're going to do the Legends. So here we go.
Legends of the Long Box.
All right. I don't know if you had brought any reading material this week or not.
No, it's going to be all on you this week. Yeah,
no problem. I've got a few, and some of them are you will be interested in. Others, you know, you might not be. First one we're covering, Carnage, Absolute Carnage number 3 dropped today this week. Absolute Carnage has nailed it. I'm enjoying it. Basically, what's going on, like I think I told you guys last week, Carnage is going around trying to get every essence of the Venom Codex, which is basically whenever a Venom symbiote of any sort, whether it was Carnage or any of the children, attached themselves, they left a piece of themselves inside the DNA of their host. And Venom's just going around gathering them all. This one has Venom and Eddie. You know, Eddie's finally come to terms. He's like, okay, we need to do something. Eddie's basically gone off of the deep end. He's hiding out. Even his son, Eddie has a son, and he doesn't even tell his son that he's his son. He's his brother because he doesn't want him to be in danger. So finally he's confronted that, you know what? No, you need to be part of this. So he is gathered by a bunch of other superheroes that have had the Venom symbiote or one of them attached. So he's brought in with Peter Parker, the Thing, Captain America, and Wolverine. And Bruce Banner's there. Bruce has devised a way of removing the Codex from each person so that way they don't have to be killed. Carnage won't be coming after them, and they can spend their time now, instead of being on defense, they can now spend their time being on offense.
Hmm. Yeah, so, I read a little about this run, so I'm definitely more interested and peaked. It sounds fun. I like fun ones like this.
Yeah, the cool thing is, it was so funny. They're like, "Oh, what's Bruce doing here?" He's like, "No, I'm the one that's fixing you guys. I was never a Venom host, you know, or any of the symbiotes." But there's definitely a interesting melding at the very last page. So I can't wait to the next one comes out, because Venom has to attach himself to somebody at one point, and it gets a little interesting, and that's where this issue stops. I'm like, damn it. So it'd be great to see what happens. Next one is, and you and I talked about this probably a couple months ago, Spider-Man number one with J.J. Abrams and his son, Henry Abrams.
How was it?
This was actually, I was very interested. I wasn't sure where we were going when we first cracked it open, trying to find what they were doing. But basically, this takes place in basically an alternate reality. Peter and Mary were married at one time. They have a kid. Mary has died, and Peter has turned into an absentee father. He's no longer Spider-Man, though. Certain things have happened to him since the death of Mary Jane, and he's kind of like relied on Aunt May to help with his son. And the last thing we see is his son. Aunt May finally is like, "You know what? Your dad's not pulling his weight and helping you out. Go upstairs. There's a suitcase up there you need to open up."
Mm-hmm.
And he gets up there and opens up, finds the pictures of his mom, his dad, and then he finds the Spider-Man suit.
Oh.
Because he is showing some tendencies.
okay.
It's a very interesting take on it, that it's not Peter, but Peter's not Peter anymore. So I thought it was a cool take to see what they're going to do and what direction they're going to go.
Sounds different. I'll definitely have to check that out. I saw one of the panels. I think it popped up on my page, and of Mary Jane, and I guess they. Well, I don't want to spoil it, but something happens to Mary Jane like right away.
Right away. Like within like the first like three pages, happens. So
that'll be another one I'll have to pick up.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's only a 3-4 issue run, so if you guys are interested and you want to pick up something quick, again, it's J.J. Abrams. We know how he does. Does great at the beginning, so he's only got to do 4 when it's with his son, which I think is kind of cool to have a father son team doing this as writers. Next one is this is something you and I have talked about before. I talked about it last week, where the Age of Resistance, Star Wars. I talked about the Snoke issue. Well, this week 2 issues dropped. This one was Rose and her sister. So it was a bit of a story, to a kind of a backstory to Rose of what the connection is with her sister. Why is everything, you know, why does she react the way she did with her sister dying? So it does a small backstory of how they became part of the rebellion, which is kind of fun. If anybody's a fan of Rose, I know a lot of people are not, but I thought this was a cool story.
She's a good character. I mean, she just, you know, I don't know why she got so much hate, but, you know, it's interesting to see how that relationship with her sister is, because as you said, you know, it was hinted at that they were very close, so especially how she dies, and you know spoilers if you haven't watched Last Jedi, she dies in the beginning of the movie, and they had like a similar necklace. So
I think a lot of people's reaction to Rose was that she was an unnecessary character, and her story, the main part of why she came in, that whole part of the movie was unnecessary too. You know, they really didn't get anything out of it, like that journey to go to that to what was it. What was that? No, it wasn't Octu. Where was it?
The gambling planet. I forgot.
But you know, to go off to that planet. That's where a lot of people, their heat for Rose comes from. Is that it's an unnecessary journey. You did nothing. Nothing was come over other than to learn that she was raised as a slave, and that was it. And she hates rich people.
Yeah,
that really is what it boiled down to.
Yeah.
Next one was another Age of Resistance, was Rey, Rey number one. This I loved. This takes place moments after Rey, Chewie, and Finn get back from destroying the Starkiller base. Mm-hmm. And Force Awakens. And so what it starts off with is the one moment you and I always talked about. Why did Leia walk right past Chewie? Why didn't they? It starts with those two having an embrace.
Oh, good.
Going, I know, I felt it too. You know, and then she's, you know, I gotta stop crying. You're gonna smell like a wet Wookiee here. So we get that moment. We didn't get it. We should have gotten it in the movie, but we got it at least.
Well, at least we got it in comic form. It counts, so it's good. But at least they made up for it. Good, good.
Then it goes with Rey explaining what happened. How did he die? What took place? So she's telling Leia, and Leia's like, I do know. I felt it. And then it jumps to Rey and Chewie and R2 leaving to go. Octu is where Luke is. Mm-hmm. It goes off to them leaving, and it basically tells the journey that happened, that we got the quick slide across in the movie, but there's something happens on their journey there that they have to get the Millennium Falcon's thing that was breaking every time that broke finally, and they had to stop at some rummage place, and it just a little adventure for them. So it was kind of fun to see that, and then it picks up right when she's about ready to hand the saber off to Luke.
Oh, we'll have to check Resistance out. Sounds
interesting. Yeah, that one, I like them so far, though. Some of those ones are kind of cool. They just give a little backstory. Okay, this is what happened one day to these people. I like the Rey one because it gave a connection of what their connection is. That, yes, Rey talked to Leia about what happened to Han, and they had a connection. Because we really never saw a true connection with them. But here we get to see it, and we also, like I said, get to see the hug of, Leia and Chewie, mourning Han.
The Star Wars comics are always good at filling in those holes, so
yeah.
I had no doubt that this was actually going to do the same thing, but now that you've told me this, it's probably one of the things I'm going to have to Acme and talk to Josh and, put some comics aside.
There's a lot of those. A lot of those. I'm going to have to rummage through and tell you which ones I think you might
want
to aim for.
We'll have to do that.
Then the next one is a series of books, and I've just gotten caught up. It started about 2-3 months ago. I don't know if you've heard of them. But the House of X and the Powers of Ten, the basic rebooting of the X-Men universe in Marvel.
Again,
and,
another reboot of the X-Men.
This is amazing. You have to read these books. They run hand in hand. The House of X and the Powers of Ten run hand to hand. But what's kind of cool is the story doesn't take place in one time. You have stories that took place a decade ago. Then you have stories that are taking place now. Then you have stories that are taking place 100 years in the future, and then stories that are taking place 1,000 years in the future. And you see Charles is not in he's not in a wheelchair. And you probably have seen the pictures of the skinny little guy with a big ball on his head with an X across it.
Yeah.
That's Charles.
Really?
He's got this, that is Cerebro on his head. He's built Cerebro to be on his head at all times. Like, he goes to a party in a suit, fucking things on his head. But the whole concept is that they have, it starts off with the X-Men dropping these plants off around the country and also around the world and in space. Also, they go to Asteroid M and they plant these things. And these plants are basically like little teleporting things that you can stand next to, hold on to, and it'll teleport you where you want to go, but it only works on people with the X gene.
Ah.
And they start basically making their own world, making their own countries, and saying, no, only we're allowed here. You are not as a human. This is our place. But in the midst of it, there are some dark undertones to this Charles, and that's why you really need to check it out. That he has his X-Men aren't what you think they are. Some of them are created from pods.
What?
Some of them go off and die. Yeah, he has a team that goes off and dies in space. And like the next issue, they're being reborn from pods. It's a very interesting, because the pods are regenerating them with their mutant powers, but Charles with Cerebro is re-implanting their memories. So it's very interesting. Him and Magneto are friends. In fact, Magneto bows down to Charles because they have now seen eye to eye. So I'm saying this is not your normal Charles. This is a Charles with a little bit more power than what you're used to.
Well, he has Cerebro on his head. I mean,
yeah, and also to the point that even Apocalypse bows to Charles.
Well, we've seen that before in the past where Apocalypse has mentioned that Charles is like one of the most strongest mutants out there. But yeah, he just doesn't choose to use that power.
He does now. Okay. That's what I'm saying. You need to check this one out. This is, again, I'm an X-Men fan, but I'm an X-Men fan from the 90s. Last ones I really picked up were the Age of Apocalypse. I love those series. But this just grabs me and just pulls me in every time. And I just cannot stop reading these. These are short runs right now. Both comics are representations of one and the same crossover event going on within the Marvel Universe, and that will lead up to the relaunch of Dawn of X, which will be coming down. So they're still in their infancy. There's two runs going on right now. I think they're only at like number 3 or 4. So not that far into it. So it's something you can pick up in, and the reads are real quick. The only thing with the reads is they give you data sheets. Like there's little pages in the middle of the story of data of things that are going on. You have to read those. You can't brush over them. They're not fluff pages. There's shit in there that you need to read if you want to keep up with the story.
Okay. And how long are those fluff? How long are those little
pages?
Yeah.
Well, no, they're pages. They're small. Yeah, they're small prints too. There's a lot of information in these little pages, and you'll maybe see two an issue.
Okay.
But there's things that go on. There's like little chart, and so it's a bigger world, and where they're going right now. I can't wait to see where they're heading right now. It's just amazing.
Well. Yet another one I have to put in my list.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's definitely one. So that is my reads for the long box this week. Hopefully I'll have some more on the House of X. And not what else comes out next week. I haven't gotten a chance to look at my future reads. Again, not much on DC. They're still doing the Year of the Villain, and it just hasn't caught me. Sorry, guys, if anybody wants to hear about DC, I just I'm not feeling it. Which is weird. You're coming from me.
Yeah, I've been doing Year of the Villain, but the last one I picked up was the Batman Superman one. So nothing yet, but hopefully this week there will be.
Yes. All right. Very good. So that is all we have left, guys. Make sure you do check us out on heroesasylum.com page. We are on there you have links to all of our pages or all of our social media as well. And I've spent this weekend updating our YouTube channel. We have about 10 of our issues on there right now. So if anybody's, if you want to listen and you don't want to do it, through the regular podcast systems, you can just go to YouTube. We have it there. I know one of our part-time listeners, they don't have access to really doing that, but they have YouTube on their television. So when I let them know, they're like, oh, really? Oh, okay. I can listen to that now.
Yeah, that's excellent.
So it is out there. Yeah, I've been trying to make sure. I haven't done all of our earlier episodes. What I'm trying to do is from like episode 27 to current, I'm trying to get those out. And then if I can keep it up, we'll be having every week come out just like it would on regular podcast networks, but it'll be on YouTube as well. So another option, and hopefully that will branch out into maybe where you get to see our pretty little faces.
Maybe. Never know. Could be spoilers. Never know. We might be on there someday.
Yep.
But sign up for the YouTube channel and the iTunes channel and the Stitcher channel. And we're pretty much everywhere on the interwebs.
That's right. And where can they find us on social media?
Instagram, Twitter, Heroes Asylum, The Heroes Asylum. And as always, get to the asylum.
All right, folks, have a great weekend or week. We will see you next week.
See ya.